You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Don Guerra.
And I'm Erin Wagermiller. This is the Daily Local News for Tuesday, February 20th, 2018.
Whatever happens, those who've learned to love one another have made their way to the lasting world and will not leave whatever happens.
That's musician Malcolm Dauglish quoting Wendell Berry in preparation for this weekend's Middleway House benefit concert. We'll have details in today's community report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Scott Farris speaks about his family's settlement of Monroe County and the first female graduate of Indiana University. That's coming up later on the program on this week's edition of the Bicentennial Journal, looking back on 200 years of history in South Central Indiana. But first, your daily headlines. The Bloomington City Council is holding a town hall forum tonight to address repeated outcry over the city's decision to purchase an armored car for the Bloomington Police Department. Bloomington chapter Black Lives Matter protesters and advocates are expected to voice their opposition to the nearly $250,000 purchase during public comment at this evening's town hall. City of Bloomington Communications Director Mary Catherine Carmichael says Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton and BPD Chief Mike Dekoff are expected to make quick addresses to the Assembly during tonight's town hall in City Hall's Council Chambers.
This is a council meeting, so it's really their meeting to run, they called it, but he's been asked to be a guest. I believe they will allow he and Chief Dekoff to make very brief statements at the beginning, and then, as I understand it, it'll be opened up to the public and everybody in attendance to make comments. So we're looking forward to learning some things tonight and kind of looking forward to trying to right the mistake we made, which was not having appropriate and adequate public comment prior to ordering this piece of equipment for our CERT team.
In a Facebook event called, quote, hashtag Black Lives Matter storms the hall, 56 people stated that they will go to the town hall, and more than 250 said they were interested in going. In one of the last lines of the event, an advocate wrote, quote, if officials refuse to engage with us in meaningful discussions, we will shut it down, unquote. The event is organized by Volks Booker, who forced an end to Mayor Hamilton's State of the City address last week. Booker cites Black Lives Matter's concern over police militarization and lack of public engagement over the purchase of the armored vehicle. Carmichael says the city is reviewing the process by which the armored car was purchased and why little public input was consulted.
We're taking a very close look at this, and we're talking, first of all, you want to find out how it happened, and then you want to find out why it happened, and then you want to find out how to keep it from happening again. So certainly all of those are topics of discussion in the Office of the Mayor and certainly over at the Police Department as well.
Tonight's town hall is at 6:30 p.m. at City Council Chambers in Bloomington City Hall. Members of City Council are hosting the event. It will be covered by Community Access Television Services.
A Democratic candidate for Indiana's 9th Congressional District, Liz Watson, is holding a town hall tomorrow in Bloomington over medicinal marijuana. Watson, who is among Democratic candidates vying for party nomination against incumbent Republican Trey Hollingsworth, says the legislation of medical marijuana is something Hoosiers want to see.
There is a bipartisan bill that's been introduced in the state legislature on the issue of medical marijuana. So this is an issue that people across party lines want. This is not a red or blue issue. Over 80% of veterans support medical marijuana. So So, you know, this is something that our veterans are very concerned about making sure that they have access to, and right now they don't. So, and I mean, just to give you the polling on Republican support for medical marijuana, polling from the fall of 2017 showed that 51% of Republicans actually say that marijuana should be legal. So, you know, and two-thirds of Americans overall. So we certainly have more states than not that have decided to take some measures toward medical marijuana or legalization. And so Indiana now has a bipartisan bill. There's an active conversation. We chose the topics for our town hall by asking. We sent out a survey and said, what do folks want to talk about? And so this is one of the issues people are concerned about.
Watson says medical marijuana could also serve to mitigate mass incarceration and stem the effects of the opioid crisis.
We know that here in Indiana we have a terrible opioid crisis, and we also know that opioids are incredibly addictive. You know, what we have seen in states that have legalized medical marijuana is that opioid deaths have dropped by as much as a quarter. So this is really something for our state to think about, given the incredible toll that opioids are taking on our families, and that I think is worth looking at. My position has been that the federal government shouldn't be in this business of regulating marijuana, that this is something that we ought to be looking at as a states' rights issue, and I don't think the federal government has any business trampling on the states.
Watson will host the town hall at the Monroe County Public Library tomorrow night at 5:30. She will be joined by national marijuana legalization advocates from Normal, Hoosier Veterans for Medical Marijuana, and Dr. Clark Britton.
The Indiana legislature overwhelmingly passed a bill today that would allow for the sale of alcohol across the state on Sundays. Indiana's prohibition on the sale of alcohol on Sunday is a legislative holdover from the Prohibition era. The Indiana House of Representatives voted 82-10 in favor of doing away with the Sunday prohibition yesterday. The bill has already passed the state Senate. The Associated Press reports an amendment to the bill, allowing it to go into effect immediately, still needs to be passed by the Senate before it heads to Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb's desk. The amendment is expected to pass in the Senate and to be signed by Holcomb within weeks.
The Bloomington Redevelopment Commission has awarded construction and electrical contracts as the city begins building its trades district infrastructure. According to the Commission's February 19th meeting packet, the project will realign West 10th Street between North Rogers and North Morton. The intersection of 10th and North Morton will be improved, and a new parking lot created south of 10th Street. City Controller Jeff Underwood presented the bid packages.
There were two bid packages, one for the construction of the roads, underground facilities and the streets. The other was an electrical package for the streetlights and signage and so on.
The commission also approved four contracts relating to renovation work at the Dimension Mill. The historic Dimension Mill is located within the 12-acre trades district and is part of the former Showers Furniture Factory. Underwood said the renovation plans include an alternate design for the mill's basement.
The base bid was on the mill was just one continuous floor. The alternate would actually cut out the floor on the south end of the building and then construct a lower level that will be open all the way up to the sawtooth roof that will be used for a variety of uses, but mainly for activities both within the Dimension Mill itself or can be rented out for wedding receptions, parties, business activities, and so on.
According to Underwood, some of the area's parking availability will change as these projects take shape.
We have notified the county that parking will not be available after March 31st per our RDC agreement with them. So they have been notified, so they'll vacate the gravel lot and the concrete lot that is north of 10th Street.
The city is also contracting with an arborist to protect a few oak trees in the construction zones. Economic Development Director Alex Crowley says arborist Judd Scott has created a mitigation plan.
If you've been out there recently, you know that there are four pin oaks that are on the land immediately to the west of the Dimension Mill. They are nice old trees. We want to try to preserve them throughout this process. So we have looked at arborist services to be able to do three things. One, do any kind of preliminary work that we can do before construction gets going, trimming, doing all the advanced work on the trees, which haven't really been taken care of explicitly for a while. Two, during construction, ensuring that the construction process doesn't infringe too much on them. There are four trees total. One in particular has issues with its root system already, so there's a question as to whether or not how much we can do to actually maintain that tree throughout the process. But our hope is to try to maintain them all the way through.
Crowley says groundbreaking on the Trades District infrastructure is tentatively scheduled for March 6th. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Aaron Wagermiller.
And I'm Don Guerra. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Now in its third year, Love Songs for a Lasting World is described as a winter extravaganza of song and dance. It's also a signature fundraiser for Middleway House, a local nonprofit providing services to survivors of domestic and sexual abuse and human trafficking. This year's concert honors former Middleway House director Toby Strout, who guided the nonprofit for 30 years. Strout passed away in 2017. In today's feature report, WFHB Assistant News Director Sarah Vaughn talks about the concert with organizers Anna Strout and Malcolm Dauglish and Middleway House Communications Coordinator Sarah Hunt.
Thank you so much for being here. Can you give me your name and your association with Middleway House?
My name's Sarah Hunt, and I'm the communications coordinator.
Anna Strout, daughter of Toby Strout, a volunteer and sponsor of Love Songs for a Lasting World and other programs.
Malcolm Dauglish, musician who, with my family, have been here for 30 years or more.
I know this is a signature fundraiser for Middleway House, but there's a lot of new content this year, yes? And can you tell me what's new and what can our audience expect?
Well, there is we've got a whole different way of doing the Lasting World call and response piece that opens it and bookends it. And then kind of my partner in music for about 10 years, Gray Larson. This was back in the 70s, early 80s. He and I toured around the country in folk festivals and were reprising a song that he arranged called La Valse pour les petites jeunes filles, the waltz for the little girls. And that's new. And there's going to be some dancing to the Little Potato, which is slightly different. And our daughter, Mia, and her Palabolas veteran dancer partner, Jun Kuribayashi, are doing a new dance. It's kind of a tango fusion. We're doing some new Wendell Berry pieces. The Thrush Song is something we haven't done before. And then there's this song about pulling yourself out of despair with dreams of flying, and it's called Pegasus. So there's quite a few. I'd say about 75% of the whole of the program is new. And we're reprising some of the things like the Little Potato and The Lasting World was in our first one. Well, that we do that. That's kind of the signature piece. This is the actual Wendell Berry poem. Whatever happens, those who've learned to love one another have made their way to the lasting world and will not leave whatever happens. So that's where we got the title of this whole Love Song for a Lasting World.
I was going to ask you where the title came from.
Wendell Berry poem.
Nice. Mm. And this is a special benefit because it's in honor of former director Toby Strout. I know she gave a lot of her heart to this organization over many years. How is it going to honor her?
Well, also going back to the title, Love Songs for a Lasting World, this is a love song to Toby, who's created an amazing world for thousands and thousands of people. And so she's kind of paved the way. She's a pioneer and a trailblazer. And so it's kind of a call to action to remember and honor the work that she has set us all up to do and to continue that. And so she is Malcolm's longtime friend and neighbor. And so we all kind of generated the idea together for this event 3 years ago. I mean, many, many years ago, but it finally came to fruition 3 years ago. And Toby was a songbird and a lover of dance movement, obviously Malcolm's Pies, which he brought over very often. So it's kind of a synthesis of the love also on our street, between our families, the love that we all have for the natural world, the hikes we took together, the gardens we gardened together. And so this is just kind of bringing everything full circle and reminding us that the love is enduring and can be sustained and can continue to grow. This year, to honor her, she's in every song. And there's a beautiful rendition of Blackbird, the Beatles song, which is relevant to my mother and also to Middleway House's New Wings building, giving people new wings, new perspectives, new things to live and champion, live for and to champion. And Malcolm has put together a beautiful slideshow to go under
The Bird Calls Dog,
the Bird Calls Dog, which is a meditation on grief and yearning. And there's a beautiful slideshow, which Toby bookends. And it kind of speaks to her spirit.
Can we talk a minute about that for those of us who aren't native Bloomingtonians, who aren't townies? What are the Oolites, and how did you get the name?
Well, that's a really good question. Oolite with two O's is a type of limestone, and Oolite with three O's is a typo that I liked and kept. It happened when I was putting in the the name of our publishing company. And so it became Oolitic Music with three O's, and Oolation of the Camp is this camp out in Yosemite where singers come together and they off the grid and they sing their guts out and they bounce their voices off mountains. And it's kind of a boisterous song of nature and wildness. And so the Oolites are just basically people who have come from all over the continent to sing this music either out in Yosemite or here at on the BCT stage.
This is kind of exciting. So what's emerged is that the Oolite or Oolitic camp is an incubator where new material is developed, and then it has its second debut after Yosemite in Bloomington every year. So,
Sarah, this is a benefit for Middleway House. Can you talk about some of the programs that these funds will support?
So Middleway House, as most people know, does have an emergency shelter that houses survivors of domestic abuse, sexual violence, as well as human trafficking. We also have a 24/7 crisis hotline that anyone can call in on to receive any kind of help or support. There are trained advocates 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. We also have a transitional housing program that will house survivors for up to 2 years in 28 apartment units at The Rise. We have a legal advocacy department for anyone who is seeking assistance with divorce or protective orders and any other legal matters. And you don't have to be in shelter or in our transitional housing to access that. That's open to the community. We also have a prevention program that goes out into middle and high schools in the community and surrounding counties to help educate people about what consent is, what healthy relationships look like. It's called Building Healthy Relationships. We have crisis advocates, on-scene advocates that can go out to the hospital or other areas in the community to support survivors if need be. We have support groups. So we have an intimate partner violence support group, a sexual violence support group, and a survivors of incest support group. And again, those are open to the broader community. You could just call into the crisis line to link up with a coordinator to discuss those options. That's 812-336-0846. And we also have a child care program and youth program as well that are available.
Can you talk a little bit about the New Wings?
New Wings is our administrative office, but also houses our emergency shelter. And so, as Anna mentioned earlier, this really was a vision to give people new wings. And at Middleway, all of our services are empowering. So we are not telling survivors what to do. We're meeting them where they are, hearing what they want to do, and then giving them options and supporting them through that so that they can find their wings.
That was Anna Strout, Malcolm Douglas, and Sarah Hunt speaking about this Saturday's concert, Love Songs for a Lasting World. The concert is a signature benefit for Middleway House. Malcolm Douglas and the Oolites will present the concert Saturday at the 6 p.m. at the Buskirk Chumley Theater.
Coming up next, the Bicentennial Journal, looking back on 200 years of history in South Central Indiana.
Monroe County's Bicentennial Committee presents the Bicentennial Journal, stories celebrating the rich history of Monroe County.
This is my Monroe County story. My name is Scott Ferris, and the story continues. So the legacy of the Ferris family is that we were one of the earliest settlers of Bloomington. We came here from South Carolina. We're Scotch-Irish, like a lot of folks, the earliest settlers of the community. My great-great-great-grandfather was a religious person. He was the first pastor, but he was also a farmer and an educator. And he did take and tutor students in mathematics at Indiana University. His kids went on to be ministers as well. Four of his kids graduated from Indiana University when it was a seminary back in the 1850s and 60s. So going back and talking about James Ferris when he first came to Bloomington, they lived up on Blair Farm, which is up on the west side. And if you study the history of Bloomington, that's one of those areas that's a historic landmark. They lived in a log cabin up there. And he was given an opportunity primarily because of the money that he was able to take and save as a principal in the Pendleton Academy down in South Carolina. He acquired 160 acres, and they were called school auctions back in the day. This was to raise money for the school system. And that 160 acres is where the IU Sports Complex is today. The Assembly Hall, the stadium, and the other sports-related facilities in that area. My great-great-great-grandfather, James Ferris, and then subsequent generations for almost 129 years, farmed that property, and we sold it to the university in the 1950s. The Herman B. Wells, when he was president of Indiana University, for those folks who remember the IU history, we were running out of space with the old field house, and there was no place to go, and that was premier land right next to the university. And for years, Herman B. Wells had eyes on it, and eventually the university went after that. James Ferris was a scholar. He was an educator, a farmer, a reformer, first pastor of the Reformed Presbyterian Church here in Bloomington, which is on First and Lincoln, is still there today. And he was a mathematician. He tutored various folks at IU at the time. One in particular was Joseph Wright, who is Wright Quad, who became the governor and a U.S. senator down the road. The Ferris Farm, which faced Dunn, 17th Street, Fee Lane, and Matlock Road, which is the bypass. They grew all sorts of crops and cattle and milk cows and the like, and actually supplied milk to Johnson's Creamery back in the day and to Ferris Brothers Meat Market. Ferris Brothers Meat Market was my grandfather and two of his brothers, and they acquired the market from the, and these are some old Bloomington names, you had the Hinkle family, and you had the Serre family, and this is about 1923. I do believe that members of my family worked in those businesses before they bought it. The first market didn't come into being until, I think, 1923. And my grandfather and his brothers had it for any number of years, and then my father came back from World War II, and this is Charles Bud Ferris. He took over the market and renamed it Ferris Market, and he stayed in that market until the day he died, literally. Some of you might remember him. He was in city politics for 25 years, and he was the first president of the city council of Bloomington when it became a second-class city. The Ferris family has over five generations of IU graduates. We had the first female graduate in 1925, and that legacy was continued after a period of time when the Ferris Market was created, and it was passed on to my father. And what we found is that Bloomington is a great community. If my kids and grandkids locate back to Bloomington, we'll actually have a seventh and eighth generation of Ferris in the community. And that's about it. Appreciate the opportunity to talk about it.
Join us next week for another edition of the Monroe County Bicentennial Journal.
Support for the Bicentennial Journal and WFHB comes from the Monroe County and Visit Bloomington. More information about Monroe County's Bicentennial is available at monroecounty200.us.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Sarah Vaughn.
The Bicentennial Journal is produced by Kate Welsh, with help from Joyce Poling. Our engineer is Megan Wade. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumpstein, Scott Schmadke, and Danny Graff. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Aaron Wagermiller.
And I'm Don Guerra. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast as well as all other WFHB news programming online at wfhb.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news at wfhb.org.
Stay tuned for Counterspin, fairness and accuracy in reporting's weekly radio show, providing a critical examination of national headlines. That coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a daily local news volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcasts of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.